they have all of our photos. They have all of our driver's license photos.
But now some police departments are using new technology.
He doesn't have to take his eyes away from the scene.
You put that into the systems, that's a vehicle you want to pay attention to.
He can be getting information from his equipment.
It's actually a GPS tracker inside.
Having that early detection can give him time to call for backup.
We find that government jumps feet first into these wide-scale surveillance programs.
All of our passport photos, mugshots, you name it.
They don't think through the protections before doing this.
And so they can take a picture off something like social media or even a camera on the street and use that to find someone.
Law enforcement today rely on more than a gun and a flashlight to do their jobs. Increasingly, cops are using new technologies to police. It's a conversation I started this fall with Andrew Ferguson, author of The Rise of Big Data Policing.
New forms of predictive analytics, new forms of surveillance monitoring, that's changing the way police police. It's changing who they police, it's changing where they go on patrol, it's changing when they police, and in many cases, it's changing how they police.
And we picked up the conversation last month with Dr. Barry Friedman, a professor at NYU School of Law and director of the school's policing project.
You know, there are some people that say all in on technology and some people that are say absolutely no to policing technology. And I think that's the wrong question. The question is, how can we use these technologies responsibly in ways that help us fight crime and violence, but also avoid the downsides that you can have?
So this week, we want to better understand what those technologies and techniques are, including everything from cell phone tracking devices and DNA collection technology to the use of gang databases. Also, we'll be exploring the trade-off between civil liberties and security, which is something many of you are weighing in on.
James, Dover, Ohio. I'm not really worried about policing as long as it does not interfere with my personal life. I have nothing to hide from the government.
Hi, this is Meg from Nashville, and I think the less privacy we have, the less control we have. Linking privacy and safety together is a huge sham, and it's designed to trick the public into sharing their private matters out of fear.
Hi, I'm Michael from Centerville, Utah. How much privacy am I willing to give up in the name of safety? Well, if I'm not doing or saying anything suspicious, why do I care?
Hi, my name is Crash. I'm calling from Milwaukee. The amount of privacy I'm willing to give away in the name of safety? None. I've given plenty up for convenience already, often without realizing or even consenting to it.
Imagine this scenario. Someone breaks into a building, steals a bunch of money, and escapes. But a security camera catches them in the act. With facial recognition technology, police can grab that footage, scan the person's face, and compare it against other photos in other databases and identify that person. Police say they use technologies like these to solve crimes and locate potential suspects, but it's also been criticized for its inaccuracy and potential bias, particularly when it comes to identifying or misidentifying people of color and women. Across the United States, there are a number of companies working in this space, including Massachusetts-based Morpho Trust and South Carolina's DataWorks Plus. And even companies like Amazon are getting into the game of selling facial recognition technology to law enforcement.
Amazon Recognition Video uses the visual, what, temporal, when, and motion from the video to deliver high-quality person tracking and detection of activities like running, playing soccer, or getting into a car.
But at least one company says they refuse to provide their technology to police.
We hope that there is a day where all the good use cases can be done by government with oversight, with regulation. But where we are today is a lack of oversight and a lack of regulation. These things can be used almost any way they'd like to.
That's Brian Brackeen, the CEO of Kairos, an artificial intelligence company specializing in facial recognition. He started out by explaining how the technology works and why he won't sell his product to cops.
Historically, it's worked, and I say historically as in like 2 years ago, it worked with something called machine learning, which means looking at points on your face, measuring the distances between those points, and then creating like a face print or a fingerprint with that. And that approach generally is agnostic to skin tone, race, things of that nature. The new way of doing it, with a much faster, much more powerful way, is using artificial intelligence, which is something called deep learning. And what that is like a pixel by pixel, almost like a pore by pore analysis of every single image. And we're comparing everything in that image, including skin tones, shadings, lights, darks. And it's those systems that have a trouble with different races.
Now, let's talk about average, everyday Americans. Do most of us engage with face recognition technology in our daily lives today?
The most common place you'd find facial recognition is the iPhone 10. I think there's millions and millions of those out there now. You may have seen someone using facial recognition to log into their phone. But also large companies like USAA, AARP, and others are also using facial recognition.
And what are they using it for?
Interestingly enough, USAA released some information showing that a lot of singers were using their facial recognition to log onto their accounts. That way they could just not have to remember their passwords. It was much more easier for them to use.
So let's talk about the connection between this and law enforcement, which is the issue that we're exploring this week on the show. You know, recently watched a crime show, and it was one of those shows where they show you the different steps that the police go through to find criminals. And they were able to, based off of a social media posting, they were able to take that person's Facebook photo or Snapchat photo and run it through a database of photographs, licenses, for example, and match that to the Facebook photo, and then ultimately find a criminal history for this person and get that person off the street. Seems like a pretty good use of the technology, is it not?
I think in the very specific scenario you gave, that's exciting. The challenge is it's never quite that easy, quite that clean. So one of our major issues at Kairos is government's use of facial recognition. They have all of our photos. They have all of our driver's license photos, all of our passport photos, mugshots, you name it. And so they can take a picture off something like social media or even a camera on the street and use that to find someone. And we think that that is not the expectation people have when they go to get a driver's license. So if you are a state, let's say the state of Washington, you can simply take your driver's license database that you already have, put a camera on Fifth Avenue downtown in Seattle, and then figure out who everybody is. And then look for people that have warrants, this or that, or maybe not. God forbid, you're looking at maybe their political backgrounds, you name it. Same is true for people like the FBI or the CIA. They can send anyone, including Facebook, like a national security letter. So they've already got all of our photos. They can then say to Facebook, I want photos of this person. Facebook would have to comply. And then obviously they have all the information they need to make matches anywhere. So these are the things we think that are concerning.
Now, you said you refuse to sell your technology to the federal government or imagine to any government entity. Give us some of the reasons why. And I think race plays a big part in this, right?
Yeah. And so one of the concerns we have is it could be used any way it wants to be used, and it's not fair in the way that it can find people. This is what I mean. Because these systems are trained on different faces, white faces, black faces, Asian faces, you name it, a lot of these algorithms are trained primarily on white male subjects. And because of that, they have a harder time finding women. They have a harder time finding or helping African Americans, or you name it. They're also maybe more likely to false positively identify someone with darker skin tones or a woman versus a man. So therefore, in a government scenario, you'd be more likely to be maybe charged with a crime because of your skin tone or because your ethnicity or gender. Obviously, that's inappropriate.
Now, have you been approached by police or any federal agency to work with this type of software? Are you having conversations like that from the client side?
Yeah, we've had to turn people down from time to time. I would say we're asked about our software by a government agency probably 2 to 3 times a month. And we've also offered at one point, or started some conversations where the government wanted to invest in Kairos for access to this technology. And we didn't take that deal either.
Now, of course, you make this technology and you sell it to private clients, right? So you gave the example of a bank, for example, that might use my face in order to log in to my account. How do I know that even if I'm not working, my data isn't going to the federal government, that a company like yours or someone else's will actually protect that information?
Well, the good news with private companies is, again, they don't have those master databases of your photo. So in the government scenario, you could literally have no idea they're using facial recognition on you as you drive down the street. In the corporate scenario, you would have to at least submit one image the first time saying, this is me, I want to use this service. Now, it is incumbent upon us, and we'd love to see regulation as well about data privacy and data protection, that they don't take that information and then give it to other parties. But at least at the outset, you know what was going on.
And what are your concerns or maybe suggestions to companies that do similar work that you do, that they may say, you know what, this is a great client, federal government will work or state governments will work with me, and this is, you know, all for solving crime and making this a safer country.
I think that oftentimes we lie to ourselves in order for us to feel good about some of these use cases, even when those folks know that their technology probably isn't appropriate for these uses. All of us are all for identifying things like child predators in parks, right? I'm for it. We're all for it. We just need to find a way to make sure that these are the use cases that we're limiting our products to and not beyond that. And for Kairos, we don't believe we can control how a government would use it, so we're not even going to go that direction. But if somebody wanted to focus on that use case, we would totally understand. The challenge for us all societally, and why I'm here today, is as a group, as a society, where do we draw the lines and how can we regulate around those lines?
Ryan Brackeen, CEO of Kairos, an artificial intelligence company specializing in face recognition. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.